Well, the first thing I think he would do would be to stand up and tell the truth. I mean, he had a great expression that was just tell the truth and watch them scatter.
So the further away the problem is, the easier it is to postpone action on it. And that's essentially what we're doing.
Be real. Because people in New Hampshire are really cool.
I'd say get in the game. This is a problem facing your generation. You have to have a voice in the decision.
Welcome to Facing the Future, brought to you by the Concord Coalition on WKXL, New Hampshire's talk radio station. Tune in each week as we dive into topics related to fiscal policy, like healthcare, taxes, national security, the national debt, and more. You will hear discussions with experts, elected officials, and industry leaders on how the nation's fiscal and economic challenges impact current and future generations, and we'll explore some of the solutions. I'm your host and New England Regional Director for the Concord Coalition, Chase Hageman. Today I'll be joined on the show by Concord Coalition National Field Director Phil Smith and Concord Fiscal Lookout John Bohm from Virginia. We will be getting an update from Phil on Concord's nationwide grassroots efforts, a bit of John's history that reaches back to one of our co-founders, as well as their experiences in New Hampshire during the primary, interacting with presidential candidates, and participating in the recent college convention. But before we dive into today's discussion, let's kick off the program with our first segment, Facing the News, where we will take a few minutes to see what is going on in the world of fiscal policy this week. The budget tracker for CQ Roll Call is reporting a legal opinion on budget law could soon become a focus of the Senate's upcoming presidential impeachment trial. The Government Accountability Office is expected to release its opinion soon on whether President Trump and senior White House officials violated a 1974 budget law that requires federal agencies to spend appropriated money as Congress directs. The ruling could go to the heart of the case made by Democrats that President Trump held up $391 million in Ukraine security aid for nearly 2 months last summer to extract political favors. Ultimately, the funds were released, but the Pentagon still couldn't obligate $35.2 million of its $250 million fiscal year 2019 Ukraine military assistance appropriation before that spending authority expired. Congress had to extend the funds' availability in a stopgap funding law. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer said he has a simple solution in mind on how to carve up next year's discretionary spending among the 12 appropriations bills. The bipartisan budget deal enacted last summer effectively holds the line on discretionary spending for fiscal year 2021, providing an increase of less than 1% over this year's level. That amounts to an increase of $5 billion, divided evenly between defense and non-defense programs. Hoyer said he has recommended to the appropriations committees that they give each of the 12 bills its proportional share of either the $2.5 billion increase in defense spending or the $2.5 billion increase in non-defense spending. A little-noticed provision in last year's stopgap funding measure has widened a clash among terrorism victims for scarce federal compensation. The law enacted in November gave families of victims of the September 11th attacks access to a fund designed for former hostages held by Iran and other victims of state-sponsored terrorism. The legislative move, which extended the life of the fund to 2030, was triggered by contentious court judgments that found Iran responsible for the 2001 attacks on New York and Washington waged by al-Qaeda terrorists. The court rulings ran counter to the conclusions of the 9/11 Commission, the official group created by Congress in 2002 to provide a full account of the al-Qaeda attacks. The fiscal year 2021 appropriations process might be a circumstance of hurry up and wait. Congress has overall discretionary spending levels set. The president has scheduled the release of his budget proposal. The House and Senate could ratchet through their appropriations bills accordingly. But that is unlikely because it is an election year, and elected leaders have a habit of using key issues to slow down or even cripple legislation. Thus, we may be looking at yet another continuing resolution to kick off the next fiscal year beginning October 1st that would likely carry through the fall elections. When the Affordable Care Act was signed into law in 2010, a major selling point was that it was paid for instead of deficit financed. However, slowly but surely, most of those deficit-cutting efforts are getting repealed. Congress has delayed the hospital payment reductions and scrapped the planned creation of a cost-cutting panel known as the Independent Payment Advisory Board, and last month, it repealed three health care taxes that would have produced $373 billion in revenue over a decade. As part of a fiscal year 2020 spending package, lawmakers repealed three unpopular taxes, a 2.3% levy on medical devices, a fee on health insurers, and a 40% excise tax on high-cost insurance plans, also known as the Cadillac tax. The White House apparently wants to tighten eligibility for Social Security's disability insurance program. The Social Security Administration is preparing a plan that would revise eligibility for disability benefits based on age, education, and work experience. The proposal aims to address major economic and demographic shifts over the past four decades, according to the text of the draft rule. But critics worry that the disability insurance plan, along with other White House efforts to revise the federal safety net, could do harm to those who still need help. President Trump is planning to divert an additional $7.2 billion in military funding for border wall construction this year, which would be more than the $6.7 billion he is already seeking to divert, and much more than the amount Congress actually appropriated for a wall this year. A package extending lapsed tax breaks that was tacked onto last year's spending legislation renewed most of the lapsed provisions only through 2020. That means there will be mounting pressure throughout this year from various groups to get their breaks extended again, perhaps in a lame duck session. But the forecast for major tax legislation this year is bleak, and neither party was successful in attaching other tax priorities to the year-end spending package. And time is growing shorter for efforts to rescue union pensions, even though 125 plans covering 1.4 million people are forecast to become insolvent in the next 20 years. And by the end of 2025, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation's insurance fund that backs these plans is expected to run out of money. Even the one big issue that both parties say they favor, a major infrastructure spending package, appears unlikely to get anywhere this year. The cost and politics have gotten in the way, not surprisingly. The two parties have never been able to agree on how much spending is needed or how to pay for it. Efforts to raise the federal gasoline tax have gone nowhere, and an election year makes it likely that most policymakers will be resistant to raising taxes. Up next, I'll be joined on the show by Concord Coalition National Field Director Phil Smith and Concord Fiscal Lookout John Bohm from Virginia. We will be getting an update from Phil on Concord's nationwide grassroots efforts, a bit of John's history that reaches back to one of our co-founders, as well as their experiences in New Hampshire during the primary, interacting with presidential candidates, and participating in the recent college convention. We will be back after these short messages. Welcome back to Facing the Future. I'm your host, Chase Hageman. I'm joined on the show by Concord Coalition National Field Director Phil Smith and one of Concord's fiscal lookouts, John Bohm from Virginia. John and Phil are actually here in the Granite State for the college convention with New England College to get a taste of what it's like on the ground in New Hampshire right now during the primary. So I'm sure we'll talk about that in more detail, but the primary focus of today, pun intended, is going to be Concord's grassroots activities around the state, around the region, around the country. And then we're actually going to talk a bit about John's deep roots with the organization and one of our co-founders. He goes way back. That's not to implicate his age at all. But John and Phil, welcome to Facing the Future.
Thank you, Chase.
Thank you very much.
Happy to have you both on the show. Phil, I'm going to kick it off with you since I promised the focus of the show is going to be our national grassroots efforts. Can you give us a play-by-play of what's going on right now, some of the larger themes and activities that might be going on in some of our key states?
Absolutely. Well, we are all over Iowa and New Hampshire these days, and it's by no coincidence. Voters in those states, particularly here in the Granite State, have an outsized influence when it comes to talking to candidates. And, of course, the mission of the Concord Coalition is to educate Americans about federal budget policy, as it relates to the national debt and our unsustainable fiscal situation that we find ourselves in. So I thought it would be a good idea to come up here and live free or die for a few days. And I'm not dying yet.
Well, I mean, you're from Georgia, and it's pretty cold outside, so give it time, I think.
I do have thin blood, and I am from a little bit south of New Hampshire. But I've had the pleasure of being up here for each of the primaries dating back to 92. And John has some history, too, with our co-founders you mentioned earlier. So I'm really looking forward to today's program, talking a little bit about Paul Tsongas. But I would like to tell you just a little bit about what's going on around the country. And in addition to us, to John and me being in New Hampshire, we're coming on the heels of a big event that we had in Minnesota. Mm. And Minnesota, also a very important state. It's a state, one of the closest states in the last presidential election. So the citizens of that state have a big responsibility to learn more about federal budget issues so that they can ask questions, too, when candidates come to their state. And in fact, one of their state senators is running for president, and John and I got to rub elbows with her here today here in Manchester, and that is, of course, Senator Amy Klobuchar. But we were in Minnesota with a freshman congressman named Dean Phillips, and he sponsored a town hall event where he asked the local governor or president is the correct term of the Federal Reserve for the Minneapolis region, probably the most famous Federal Reserve president of all the regional presidents in the country, and that is Neil Kashkari. Neil is famous in budget circles for lots of reasons, but one of the biggest is you'll remember back during the Great Recession when we had the giant $787 billion stimulus plan.
Yeah,
he was the staff person in charge of figuring out how to get that out into the nation.
Wow.
and through the various economic pipes of our economic system. So fascinating guy. Later on, he ran and lost a race for governor of California, and now he finds himself at the Minneapolis Fed. But a guy who is really well-versed, not just on monetary policy, but on our policy too, fiscal policy. So it was really interesting to get his take on things and to speak with him on that panel in Minneapolis with this freshman congressman.
Can I jump in and ask? I didn't have the benefit of being at that event, which I lament a little bit, but I've got a newborn at home, so I travel a little less than I used to. But what was his take? I mean, we're at a point where we have historically low interest rates at an odd time for that to be happening. What did he have to say about that?
Well, he did have some warnings that he issued, and he thought that even though he was always very quick to make sure people knew that he was there in the capacity as a Fed president, that mainly he wanted to talk about monetary policy, he could dip his toe into fiscal policy, too, in ways that showed that he was concerned about the size of the growth of our debt, and that when you look at our deficits growing faster than our economy, that that's a real danger sign. And when you see politicians in Washington who aren't recognizing that, who aren't talking about that, really like ostriches with their heads in the sand, ignoring these issues. He as have other leaders in the Federal Reserve, have tried to issue warnings at different times, you know, that interest rates may not necessarily always be this low. We've been lulled into thinking they'll always be this low because they've been so low for so long now. But when you look at how much interest payments are, the amount of money, hundreds of billions of dollars that we're paying each year in the federal budget, simply paying interest on the debt, and that's with interest rates low. Obviously, he's very concerned that if interest rates were to go back up, what that would do and the domino effect that that would have, and how during times like we're in now, a time of time period of economic growth should be the time when deficits are shrinking, not growing. And that makes right now a really unique time period and concerning.
Yeah, so I appreciate the sidebar. So to get back to what you were saying, we could spend an entire show talking about that topic.
Right.
So to get back to the focus on grassroots, you talked about Minnesota. Is there more going on there? Or do you want to go on?
Yeah, no, well, Minnesota was a great event. In addition to Dean Phillips, one of our board members, one of the original board members of the Concord Coalition, Tim Penny, former congressman from the 1st District of Minnesota, was also on the panel. As well as another former congressman named David Mingy. So we had a couple of congressmen. We had the federal, actually two former congressmen, the current congressman, and then the Fed president I mentioned, and then I represented Concord. And then afterwards, we had a packed house. And you want to talk about people, citizens, that are committed to this. These people came in for that session, which lasted from 5:30 until 7:00, we gave them some pizza, and they stuck around from 7 until 9 to do our federal budget exercise.
Well, it's the food, obviously.
clearly. So the people in Minnesota were just great hosts, and we had a great turnout. Lots of young people there. I think that'll be another theme of today's show, was we've been interacting with so many younger people, particularly college students, and these issues, of course, disproportionately affect these younger people. So
I don't know what you're talking about, Phil. I'm not, you know, 30 with a newborn and, you know, looking ahead at the future or anything like that.
We're depending on you, Chase. We need more FICA taxpayers. You've only got us one so far.
I'm going to start telling you you're welcome. So that brings me to actually a point I wanted to make. We've actually partnered with another organization called MindSumo recently and did what they call a challenge focused entirely on younger people and college-age people. And in that challenge, the prompt we gave these college students was, you know, tell us how we can make this more relatable, how we can connect it to this generation. What can we do to make this more attractive, basically? And I was actually surprised at how many submissions said, come to our campus. You know, come do events. And I'm thinking, well, great, we're already doing that.
Yeah.
Phil's going to tell us more about it.
Absolutely. In fact, at the college conference that we're at right now in Manchester, we've got those requests from people to come in. And we do have that ability. This budget exercise is so perfectly suited for a college campus. First of all, it's not about politics as much as it is public policy. So we always like to reinforce we're not a campaign organization. We're a policy-based organization where we want to educate people about these issues. And so if you are on a campus and you want us to come in, particularly, you know, you up here in New England, me elsewhere around the country, we can talk to you about how to run this budget exercise. Basically, it's a role-playing exercise where students or citizens pretend like they're a member of Congress for a couple of hours, and they get to put together their own federal budget. They get to decide, you know, what to keep, what to expand, what to cut, and assemble a 10-year federal budget based on Congressional Budget Office numbers. So we love to come to campuses and do that. It's right up our alley. Please let us know if that's something you want
to
do.
And I do want to get back to the field update, Phil. But before I do, I wanted to bring John into the conversation since we've gone, like, I don't know, 8 or 9 minutes without him saying a word. And I had a question for you. Have you ever done the budget exercise with the Concord Coalition?
Quite a while ago.
Okay.
I could use a refresher, but I frequented Concord sessions over the years in my professional career. Back in D.C., which I am no longer connected to in Richmond, Virginia now, I spent a lot of time at Concord events and Concord-related conversations in Washington and then in an effort to join the discussion that those people that I represented when I worked there, housing for low and moderate income people, were talking about in terms of the lack of sufficient discretionary spending.
And, you know, John is at the convention with us. He came to our latest session, and the way he asked a question of the panel, I'm sure he could actually facilitate the budget exercise on his own with the level of knowledge that he has. In fact, you know, getting back to you, Phil, that's probably the key point that we should make is, although we would love to be there to facilitate the budget exercise for people, it's actually designed for citizens to be able to do it themselves in their own civic engagement groups like Kiwanis clubs, Rotaries, even college campus classrooms.
Church groups, community centers. There's a variety of venues that this is just absolutely perfect for. And obviously there's only a finite number of Johns and Chases and Phils.
Yeah.
So and we want this to go viral. So absolutely. You can do this by yourself. We have directions on the website, and we can also kind of handhold you and walk you through the process, too.
I think one of the more unique experiences I had was I think it was Michigan, which, John, you and I were talking about offline. I Skyped in to a classroom to help them facilitate it. So the professor did the whole exercise, and I did sort of a warm-up presentation and just stayed online for any questions they might have.
That's a good way to do it. So yeah, there are lots of ways we can do it. So please reach out to us if this is something that you're interested in. Yeah.
All right, so what else do we have going on, Phil? We focused a lot on Minnesota, took a detour on the principles and priorities exercise, but I know we've got a lot of fiscal lookouts, and we're going to get to John and what he's been doing as well, but I don't want to leave anyone out.
No. And I'll be quick. I'll tell you, I don't know how I can tell you this, Chase, but I cheated on Facing on the Future. I went to another radio show. I did a radio program in Georgia last
month. It hurts. It cuts me deep.
Martha Zoller, who's a radio host down in Gainesville, Georgia, had me on her show, WDUN. Am I allowed to say other radio stations?
Sure, yeah, I suppose. Goodness.
But
self-promotion, promoting others, it's all helpful.
Great, great session. She's a very conservative radio host and very concerned about fiscal policy. And so she likes to have people on. So don't be surprised if you get an invitation to come on as well from one radio show host to another.
I will gladly come on.
You heard that, Martha. So, so she had a great show. We talked a lot specifically about that last budget deal that you've been talking about on your show that was recently passed, where once again, the deficit is just spiking. And not just because of spending increases, but because yet more tax cuts that are not offset or paid for. So deficit goes up again. So we were talking a lot about that. She's an interesting person. She ran for Congress and lost to a fellow named Doug Collins, who's now a household name, right? Mm-hmm. So nobody would know who Doug Collins was today had she won that race. But
she'd be a household name.
She would be a household name. So that's in Georgia. In Maryland, our fiscal lookout there. John is our fiscal lookout in Virginia, but our fiscal lookout in Maryland is a guy named Alex Madden, and congratulations to him. He's a lieutenant commander, was a lieutenant commander in the Navy. He's now a commander in the Navy, so recent promotion for one of our fiscal lookouts. And we have a new fiscal lookout in the state of Wyoming.
Wow, okay.
So Paul Hansen, who actually used to be with the Concord Coalition many years ago, has come back and has some extra time on his hands, so he's going to help us out in the nation's least populated state, which means those voters have the most muscle, right?
That's
because
true,
they still get two senators, despite the fact that they have like slightly more than 500,000 people, I think, in the whole state. So that's in Wyoming. And then I'm excited this coming Monday, I'll be back in the nation's capital and I'll be addressing a particular caucus of staffers. You may have heard of the Blue Dogs. Mm-hmm. They're a caucus of moderate to conservative Democrats in the House, and their staffers have asked me to come in and address them this coming Monday. So
nice.
That's it in a nutshell.
And I know we've got a few other states on that list too, like Indiana and Texas, and I'm sure there's a couple
absolutely.
Others. So
we could do two or three shows.
Yeah, I know. I
could do one show per state. And this is just your 101st show, so
that's
that would
true.
Get you.
We've finally rounded over 100. This is number 101. And I guess we could count our 101 Dalmatians out there and talk about all the good work they're doing. So keep it up, fiscal lookouts. I think now's a good time wrapping up this segment before we do to come back to you, John. You have been around Concord for pretty much since its inception because you got to know one of its co-founders, Paul Tsongas, very, very well. So why don't you give us your life story in a nutshell here before we jump into the next segment?
Okay, I'll try to be brief. My relationship to Paul Tsongas began when I was an intern at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, a job that I inherited and was grateful to have because of my affiliation with Northeastern University in Boston that promoted co-op education and promoted these types of exchanges. So I'm an intern working in Washington, D.C., and they wanted to give me exposure to different aspects of what HUD did. One of those stops on that tour was the Office of Congressional Relations. And they said, rather than have you sit here in the building, it's probably better that you're up on the hill so you see how things work. And we're going to assign you to a guy named Paul Tsongas. He's a congressman from Massachusetts. We think you'll like him and you'll learn a lot there, and they have good people. All of that was true. But it was my first introduction to Congressman Tsongas, and I worked there for 2 to 3 months. And while I didn't get to know him intimately or personally at that time, it was the first seed that has now flowered into my relationship with the Concord Coalition. I stayed in touch with his staff when he went to the Senate, and I stayed in contact with people related to my work at HUD who were also from Massachusetts, who also knew Paul Tsongas, which gets to the sort of the second chapter of the relationship. I called in a favor from one of those friends, and I asked them to ask Senator Tsongas if he would come speak to a group that I was running in Washington, D.C. I had sort of moved on in life to be an association executive director for affordable housing providers. And it was during the uptick to the 96th presidential election, and I wanted somebody to come in who had actually experienced the rough and rigor of being a presidential candidate. Oh, one of those guys is Paul Tsongas. And I called in a favor, and he graciously agreed to come to speak to the group. And they learned a lot, and I got to see him again, and we renewed our friendship. But I would reflect on the 92 election and the fact that I went all in and all out for Paul Tsongas for president. And it was during that campaign, and particularly sitting here in New Hampshire, the uptick to the New Hampshire primary in 92 that he won. He won up for a lot of reasons, but he won because one of the things he was talking about at the time that sadly we're not talking enough about now was on fiscal responsibility and educating the American public on the direction we're headed in as a country and our the problems that may befall us if we stay on a trajectory of deeper and deeper debt.
I actually think it's a great place to leave it for just a second. I want to pick up on the things you were just saying, John, especially about what Senator Tsongas was saying on the campaign trail and maybe how it compares to today's reality and where we're headed with fiscal policy. This is Facing the Future. I'm talking to Concord Coalition National Field Director Phil Smith and one of Concord's fiscal lookouts from Virginia, John Bohm. We're discussing Concord's grassroots activities, John's own deep roots with the organization and one of its founders, as well as what's going on the ground during the primary in the Granite State. After the break, Phil and John will be back, and we'll be back after these short messages. Welcome back to Facing the Future. I'm your host, Chase Hageman. I'm joined on the show by Concord Coalition National Field Director Phil Smith and one of Concord's fiscal lookouts, John Bohm from Virginia. And we're picking up on our previous segment with John and Phil talking a lot about Concord's grassroots activities throughout the state and the country. But more specifically, John was starting to give us some insight on his experience with the coalition, his experience with one of its co-founders, Senator Tsongas, and what it was like to hear a presidential candidate really focus on fiscal policy. And I want to talk a little bit about that, John, and maybe compare that to what it's like now. We don't have to play a name game, but I think there is a distinct difference between what it was like in the 90s and what we're hearing today. So, John, why don't you give us, as much as you can recollect, a recap of how Senator Tsongas approached these issues when he was on the campaign trail?
Well, in 1992, of course, you had, on the Democratic side, you had Ross Perot and you had Bill Clinton, each of whom, more so Ross Perot than Bill Clinton, positions on the debt, the deficit, and our fiscal future. But it was Senator Tsongas, I believe, that was the heart and soul of that part of the debate. And his tenacity, actually, in making sure that we were, and he as a candidate, and I mentioned this earlier today, that he was not out to be president of the United States to be Santa Claus or a panda bear, and there's a button that describes that that I still have. He wanted to get at the heart of what I think is troubling this country now, which is an out-of-control budget, an inability seemingly to get at a level of fiscal parity, if you will, to ensure the future of our country for the people that we're meeting with here in New Hampshire, which are young college-age students. I was inspired by his message then, And I carried his words of caution to the nation through his campaign and then afterwards, that if we continued on the way we were on an unsustainable path that was going to affect many aspects of the budget, including non-defense discretionary spending and defense spending as well. And I think without him, again, giving some credit to Ross Perot and Bill Clinton, we would not have had in 92 the energy around that debate. And he was sadly taken out of the race too early. I wish his voice would have carried him deeper into the campaign in 92. But he planted the seeds.
And speaking of inspiration, I will remind our listeners and maybe inform those who probably weren't alive in the 90s, because now we have an entire generation that's, you know, born in the 2000s, which is strange for me to think about. But Senator Tsongas was a Democrat. So maybe the inspiration you have had from him at that time, current Democratic candidates that are running for president might have similar inspiration. And that's, I think, a good pivot point to you, Phil. You're here on the ground in New Hampshire. You've been around the nation. You've heard the public. You've heard candidates. What's the environment like now relative to maybe in the 90s or even the early 2000s when, from my perspective, these issues took a higher priority, at least in the news cycle?
Right. Fiscal issues definitely took a higher priority in past races. I think it reached its nadir in 2016. People just didn't talk about it much at all in 2016. And when you juxtapose that with what John Boehm was just talking about, what was happening in 1992, when almost every candidate was talking about these issues. You know, Paul Tsongas based his whole campaign on this, basically. Ross Perot, if you were alive during those charts, Saturday Night Live just did these skits. You should Google it if you get a chance. He has these wonderful charts that look like he's basically using Concord Coalition charts, going around the nation with this Southern accent. He made me sound like a Yankee. He was so Southern. But he captured the nation's attention. Other candidates that year as well, Bob Kerry, senator from Colorado, was running, who also happens to be the Democratic co-chairman of the Concord Coalition right now. We always have a Democratic chair and a Republican chair, and of course, Senator Jack Danforth is our current Republican chair.
Bipartisan through and through.
That's right. But it was, I think when you juxtapose those years, 92 to 2016 in particular, you see a plethora of candidates talking about our issue and then a dearth of candidates talking about our issue in 2016. And the results are so in the data when you look at what happened afterwards. After 92, almost miraculous things happened with the federal budget. And there were lots of reasons for it, but we actually got to a balanced budget by the end of that decade. After 2016, it has been a nightmare. I mean, basically, the worst instincts of Republicans, the worst instincts of Democrats have come together to give us these horrible rising deficits. And so now we find ourselves in another election year, 2020. And I wish I could say it was 2020 clarity, but it's very blurry when you look in the future as we approach 2020. And we have a lot of candidates making a lot of big promises. Now, there are some candidates who have talked about ways to pay for it. Oftentimes it's not enough, but they have identified some plans. And it's been interesting to hear from the candidates up here. John and I have actually rubbed elbows with some of them. We were with Senator Amy Klobuchar today. Governor Weld was here. So people forget that there's actually
Republicans running.
Yeah, there are Republicans running. So Governor Weld was here. And of course, President Trump is a candidate too. So we'd like to hear from him on these issues.
Senator Bennett was here the other day.
Senator Michael Bennett from Colorado, he was here. Author Mary Ann Williamson was here. I thought she was going to tell me how much she loved me, but she looked into my eyes and said, "Phil, tell me more about the Concord Coalition." So I had a chance to do that. And then tonight, John and I are going to get a chance to see Andrew Yang. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk math.
Nice.
With him.
Math. Well, so John, does that resonate with you, with what Phil said in terms of the differences of the 90s to today?
It does. And I think the efforts by the Clinton administration to balance the budget and actually achieving it, I think it's been a long, slippery slope to today, where we find ourselves in a very, very drastic situation where our failure to act is going to be generationally felt by the young people that we're with at this conference. And I might say, as a fiscal lookout from Virginia coming here, I'm proud to say that our own Virginia Commonwealth University is represented here, some 30-odd students. But across the board, whether it's from Louisiana or Virginia, Maine, many of the states here, the understanding and the appreciation of the students here in the manner of their questions, in the substance of their questions, in the dialogue that they're having with the candidates has given me renewed hope in a way that takes me back to 92, that there is hope. And I'm not sure where this knowledge and this concern has come from other than the Concord Coalition, but the students here are on the case. There are many people that are very deep and have research and data to back up their points and their questions that gives me renewed hope that 92, we're not going to go back to that. It's a new day, but we're in a hole and we have to dig ourselves out. And I think these young people will do that.
Yeah, I probably fall into that category still, hopefully, of one of those young people. But I know we have the Gen Zs now, so I'm an old millennial at this point. But I agree. I'm also in the field in New Hampshire and other parts of New England, and soon going to be traveling the country more as our roles change and evolve in the Concord Coalition with the election. But I have routinely felt like I've had more hope with up-and-coming generations for a whole host of reasons. One, they're going to be forced into dealing with a lot of this stuff because to Absolutely. What you were saying, Phil, the facts, you know, we're trending in a certain direction, and unless we take actual proactive measures, we're going to stay on that trend line. And this, my generation and the next generation are the ones that are probably going to be taking it on the chin, are probably going to be the policymakers that make some of those serious decisions, because unfortunately I'm looking at current elected leaders, and I would love to be proved wrong, but we're just not exhibiting the political will necessary to really, you know, make the rubber hit the road. And John, looks like you have something to add.
Well, I would comment on that and absolutely agree with you, but I think whether they're young millennials, Gen Zs, middle-aged folks, or people in my age bracket, I think we need to understand and have a broader base of education and an understanding of how decision makers today, because we're not going to immediately solve this problem. It's going to take time to get there. But we have decision makers who are in office now who are making decisions that are counterproductive to the goals and the objectives of our organization and to the basic standard of fiscal responsibility that this country should be following. It's imperative that people understand the work of the Congress, the role that folks play, the decisions they make, and the things they are doing and doing well, doing badly, but the things they're not doing. And I think there's an information gap, not about fiscal responsibility as much as how Congress works and things that they do and don't do that lead to our undoing in this regard.
And I do want to talk a little bit more about what we're seeing on the ground here in New Hampshire and the convention specifically. To jump off of John's point there, one of the most recent sessions that Concord was involved with talked about future investment and how it is staggering how little we're investing in the future relative to other parts of the budget. But that's a whole nother show. Phil, I want to hear from you. What are you seeing on the ground here? John mentioned being really impressed with the young people. You mentioned rubbing shoulders with the candidates. Anything else to add?
Well, I would say that I have seen around the country what John is talking about, what we've seen in New Hampshire as well, which is I think there are volunteers that are kind of coming out of the woodwork now. The silence is actually disturbing some people. To this. So it would be better, I think, if public policymakers would lead on this and would have better plans for the future to give us a sustainable long-term federal budget situation. But instead, they're being silent. And I think that silent that silence is scaring some people. And that's why I think we're seeing more people like, you know, John Bohm is our fiscal lookout for the Commonwealth of Virginia. And, you know, in state after state, we've had people that are stepping up, stepping forward, they want to know what they can do, because it used to be we needed to do this for future generations, and that's still the case. Like, I'm very worried about your child and your grandchildren. As an old millennial, that used to be oxymoronic, by the way, but now I guess you can be an old millennial. We are worried about future generations, but it's actually affecting us now, right? Because when you look at the programs that are not going to be fully funded, take Social Security, for example, that's right around the corner. That the date that the trustees tell us that Social Security won't have enough money to pay full benefits happens to coincide with the year that I retire. I'm a Gen Xer, by the way. and there'll be baby boomers that will be with us, and they will be, you know, 10, 15 years into their retirement when that happens. So we're actually talking about things that affect people today now. It's no longer distantly in the future. So I think all these things, when people get the facts and we have high information citizens instead of low information citizens, they're asking the right questions and they're wanting to get involved. And that's what I think gives me hope. And I think it's what John's talking about as well. When we see these young people that are asking really good questions, honestly, as a candidate, I'd be a little bit scared to come to this college conference, because they are asking some questions that are deep. They did their homework.
Well, one of the questions, and it probably wasn't asked during this convention, but it is one we get a lot in the field, and that is, you know, we've been around for 25 plus years saying pretty much the same thing. You know, what gives? Well, the answer to that is everything we started talking about 25 plus years ago and warning about is now what's transpiring. So we went from, hey, let's plan for a better future, to, hey, things are moving beneath our feet and we need to now make actual difficult decisions. And I will backpedal a little bit. I was probably a little unfair with how I postured the generational perspective. There are plenty of baby boomers and Gen Xers and millennials and Gen Zers that care about these issues and do speak up and do get involved. I was making an overly broad statement about Congress. But, you know, to their credit, each generation has a cohort that right. is stepping up and saying the silence is deafening. You know, we need to act. So,
but can I say that as a boomer, or the boomer on the air, there are my boomer friends and colleagues that are worried themselves. The impact, for sure, because of our age, will not be as impactful, because we won't be around as long. The ones that will face the consequences of our inaction are the people that we're talking to at this conference. But that is not to say that we don't have shared interests and shared values and shared concerns. How does Social Security work? How does Medicare to take care of me into my golden years as my health hopefully sustains itself? I want to be around for quite a long time. And the kinds of issues that we're talking about and that Concord speaks to are the kinds of issues that will determine what the answer to that will be, whether that's for boomers or Zs. And I think this starts to come down to a generational discussion about shared values and shared concerns, but a centerpiece, which is fiscal responsibility and getting our house, our fiscal house, back in order.
I actually think that is an excellent place to leave it. I think that's a good way to recap everything we were trying to communicate during this segment. And John, eloquent as always. This is Facing the Future. I've been talking to Concord Coalition's National Field Director, Phil Smith, as well as one of Concord's fiscal lookouts, John Bohm from Virginia. We've been discussing Concord's grassroots activities throughout the country, specifically dug into the college convention taking place in New Hampshire right now, leading up to the primary, even got into some generational perspectives on a lot of these issues, which I think was an important piece of the conversation. Thank you both for joining the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chase.
You've been Facing the Future. I'm Chase Hageman. Thanks for listening.